Coming up this week, we're back at Jazz FM for our monthly roundtable discussion hosted by Trevor Dan. James Cridlin has some thoughts on why you shouldn't pull your station off TuneIn, and David Lloyd has more memories from radio's colourful history in Radio Moments.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics. Innovative solutions for creative radio people.
But before all that, Radio Today's editor, founder and executive president Roy Martin is with us to talk about some of the big stories of the week. Hello, Roy.
Hey, Stu. Oh, Siri just went off.
Hello there, Roy.
Hey, Stu. It's like the Parliament clip. Oh, shut up. Oh, it did. It turned off.
We're going to talk about Eddie Mair in a minute. First, the huge moorland fire that was threatening the Winter Hill transmitter on the Manchester-Lancashire border this week. BBC Radio Lancashire's Graham Liver took his breakfast show there for an OB.
It's Monday, the 2nd of July. You are with Graham Liver at breakfast on BBC Radio Lancashire. We are live from Lancashire Fire Service's Operational Control Centre on George's Lane on Winter Hill, looking out on Horwich. We have a reporter at the Belmont side of Winter Hill as well, with continued coverage of this major incident.
It's hard work up on those moors putting those fires out, but so far we've protected the critical mast. We don't want people losing their World Cup pictures during the games, and we do have some little pockets of fire, but so far we've had no injuries of any note, and public safety has been secured and houses have been protected.
That's Chief Officer for Lancashire Fire Service talking to Graham Liver on his breakfast show this week, and we can talk to Graham now on the Radio Today programme. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm all right. So we'd seen and heard about this fire over the weekend. Presumably you had seen it on the news as well. When you got up there Monday morning, first thing to do this OB, what was the scene that greeted you? What was it like?
Yeah, well, we first started seeing reporting on this on Thursday because a small fire, which we now know had been started deliberately near Winter Hill, was having to be dealt with by Lancashire Fire and Rescue Service. And then on Saturday afternoon, it was declared a major incident by the fire force in Lancashire. So it was decided Monday morning, this is still going to be a massive story. So we thought, right, we're going to bring the breakfast show live from Winter Hill. It's easier now doing outside broadcasts because we got these Verve vehicles, these satellite vehicles, where supposedly, and most of the time it does work, you can broadcast from anywhere. Although even if we did have our old radio van with a big mast, we should have got a signal from there anyway, because our central Lancashire receiver is on Winter Hill. But anyway, we filled in all the safety forms. We got up there and, yeah, we did the breakfast show with our Verve vehicle right outside the Lancashire Fire and Rescue Command Centre, which was just so busy with all the fire service, mountain rescue, the police, loads of other agencies as well, trying to put the fire out because it was smoky, it was windy. There was a real danger that the transmitter was going to have to be switched off on Saturday, which would have turned off people's tellies and they wouldn't have been able to watch the World Cup. But it would have taken, as you know, Stuart, a lot of radio stations off air.
Yeah, Smooth and Heart and Radio Lancashire.
It would have been tragic if they'd have gone off.
Yeah, DAB, the DAB networks as well. So the national networks are put their DAB out for the northwest of England from there. And I know a lot of the staff from Arqiva had left their site at Winter Hill. And those pictures that we saw over the weekend of the kind of fire edging towards the transmitter in the background, it was really quite horrific to see, wasn't it?
Yeah, we got led up because we did a bit of a recce on the Sunday afternoon to make sure that we get a signal from there, and we did, and we got taken up by the fire service to more or less right underneath the transmitter. They're obviously with us to make sure it's nice and safe, and we did a few pre-recorded interviews, and the scene was just a very dramatic scene, having that big helicopter swish by you with a big bucket of water on, and just to see how quickly it can take hold, because the moorland's full of peat. Just as you think you've got one bit of the fire out, it pops up elsewhere, and fire crews from all over Lancashire dealing with it. There was a fire crew who we spoke to from South Shore in Blackpool. So they'd come a really long way, about 150 to 200 firefighters up on the moorland. And I'd like to think on the Monday morning when we did our breakfast show from there, I was at one side of Winter Hill. We had reporters at the other side at Belmont. We took a wildlife expert out to see what kind of problems having the moorland destroyed would pose for wildlife up there. And I'd like to think we captured the flavour and drama of that morning, which was a major incident for Lancashire.
And obviously you were telling people to stay away. I presume you had some people texting you saying, if you're telling people to stay away, what are you doing up there? Bloody
media.
Why
are you there? Oh, yes, we had that. Why are you there? Why are you doing that? And the thing is, where we based the breakfast show from, we were at the kind of mission control centre where Lancashire Fire and Rescue Service were, and they were brilliant. They could not have done enough. And they were very keen that we get that message across. We're in a safe place. Listen to us for the information. We'll tell you. So you don't have to be a plonker and drive up there. As on the Sunday, when we were coming back down, there was a family of four with their deck chairs out. They couldn't see a flipping thing, but they were there trying to see the mask with a flask. You know, and they're thinking, it's just absolutely stupid. So, yeah, we worked alongside Lancashire Fire and Rescue Service. They were very keen for us to be there. We didn't go anywhere without a fireman or firewoman. So, we worked alongside them, and we were very keen that we didn't get in the way.
And a thank you to them, obviously, for keeping the transmitter on air so you can still be on the rest of the week.
Well, yeah, this is the thing. It's our main 103.9 FM transmitter and Freeview and DAB. Although we do broadcast on 95.5 and 104.5 FM. So
yeah,
perhaps it wouldn't have been a bad thing if it had gone off, because all the others would have. And we'd we're on medium wave as well, AM 855. So actually, if all the others had gone off, we'd have been the only one still on air on 855 AM. But, you know, gladly it stayed on and everyone stayed on.
Well, well done for staying safe, and thanks for getting up there and reporting on it for Lancashire, and thanks for coming on the podcast as well, Graeme.
No problem.
Roy Martin is still here, so the big story of the week, Eddie Mair leaving Radio 4 and joining LBC. We didn't see that coming.
We didn't, but he's not been happy, has he, since his pay cut request that he refused.
Yes, you can perhaps see now why he turned down the pay cut, because he wanted to keep his salary high to get a decent salary in commercial radio, which seems to have worked, according to reports.
Well, yeah, the reports say he's on double, so that must be £700,000 a year, if that's
maybe
true.
I can't believe that's true, but there we are. We'll take it with a pinch of salt, won't we?
That's almost as much as the smooth Northwest Drive Time presenters aren't.
Yes.
Hi, Carlos.
Hi, Carlos. The big thing we're waiting to find out now is where he's going to slot in at LBC, obviously.
Yeah, again, we're looking at rumours because we have no solid facts from Global at this stage. He's apparently starting in September, but Guido says he's going to take some kind of PM hours, maybe even the actual drive time show from Ian Dale.
The press release from Global did mention most of the other day, or in fact all of the other daytime presenters on LBC at the moment, so that would suggest they're going to squeeze their shows a little bit to make room for him rather than replace somebody.
Unless one of them's being relegated to weekends.
Also this week, a new boss for BBC Local Radio, Helen Thomas, has been announced as that. The ARIA's entries have opened, as you heard on the podcast last week. The closing date for those is the 6th of August. And shock horror, we've had some listener feedback.
We have. A listener writes on Twitter, Gary Spence, who says, long-time listener, first-time caller, really enjoy your weekly roundup at the start of the weekly podcast. Absolutely spot on in every way. Are we absolutely spot on with this, Stu?
I'm not sure. And anyway, this roundup at the start is now over. So that's it for this time. We'll be back next week.
I've got so much more to say.
Tough luck. Trevor Dan is coming up now with our monthly round table. And this was recorded before the news of Eddie Mair's move to LBC.
Thank you, Stuart, and welcome to a dungeon in London West One. Actually, that's a bit unfair, because it is, in fact, the sumptuous studio complex of Jazz FM, where we are every month for the Radio Today Roundtable. This is the July edition. Let's see who has gathered around that table.
Hello, I'm Caroline Raphael. I'm director of Dora Productions, so I work as an independent audio producer. I do some teaching, and I'm also vice chair of the Audio UK.
Which we shall talk about in a second. You also made a really interesting programme for Radio 4 last week.
I did.
Do you want to talk about that?
Yes. It was about some photographs that were taken in 1977 of what at the time was the biggest gathering of black people in this country ever. And it went out on the Windrush anniversary day. And we traced with the photographer, we traced four of the people in the photograph who are the children of Windrush immigrants. and really looked at their lives and what it was like growing up here as a kind of first, second generation.
It made me think about what you can now do with radio, simply because you can refer people to the photograph on the website, which a generation ago you couldn't do.
No, you couldn't go. And because I was working with the photographer, we had the rights for it and everything. Yeah, and people could go and have a look and also see what they look like now, 40-odd years later.
Well, it was a fascinating listen. I missed
the first
5 minutes and then I had to go back and find out what the hell was that about.
It wouldn't have meant much.
It was really, really good. Face in the crowd. Listen to it on the... Ooh, iPlayer Radio, I was going to say. How old-fashioned.
You can still
BBC
say
iPlayer
Radio.
Okay, and in the middle we have...
Graham Mack. I present The Breakfast Show on Bob FM in the home counties, and I'm also the programme controller of the radio station.
Bob FM. Tell us more.
We're a totally independent radio station.
Not a lot of them about.
No, Trevor. We're owned by two blokes, and one of them is my boss, so I get to... He doesn't give me the leave it with me. He just gives me the straight no, which saves a lot of time. And yeah, we're in the grounds of Nebworth House and we broadcast to Hertfordshire, Bedfordshire and Buckinghamshire on DAB, FM and of course online.
And you play lots of records. And
we play all sorts of stuff.
And do you have live chat with people who call in, which was always your métier when you did local radio?
Yeah, we do. Yeah, we've got a lot of local callers calling in. Most of The Breakfast Show is me talking to callers, yeah, even though it's a music show, but most of it is me talking to callers.
Highly recommended if you're ever in the home counties. Now, I've got one of the David Arnolds here.
Yes, David Arnold the Elder, I think you'll find. and I'm a composer, music producer.
Well, so is the other one.
Yes, I know, it's embarrassing. I'll tell you a bit more about... We have met each other, and we sat in each other's seats at an awards ceremony, because there's no differentiation.
So he's done James Bond theme tunes, you've written a lot of imaging, you've conducted orchestras. There's a lot of crossover, isn't there?
Well, we kind of overlap, but probably only by about 20%. The other David Arnold doesn't conduct, and he gets somebody else to do it, and he doesn't orchestrate. So they're the two things that I do that he doesn't do. But if I can mention, we had a terrible blooper with him. He was invited onto the Terry Wogan programme, and the researcher said, "Isn't it wonderful that you've written James Bond music, but also the jingles for Classic FM and Jazz? How do you find the time to do that?" And of course, there was a deathly silence. But then the next week, I was invited onto a programme, and honestly, the presenter said to me, "I followed your career for the last 10 years, and I really like these radio jingles, but thank heavens you're not writing that rubbish anymore, and you've actually written something that's worth listening to, the James Bond music."
Nice. We'll hear more from David in a minute, and also Graham. But I want to start with you, Caroline. You mentioned Audio UK. Now, for generations, we've called it RIG, the Radio Independence Group. Full disclosure, I'm its secretary. You're the deputy chair. And the name of RIG has just changed.
It has. It's changed to Audio UK. And the significance of that and the weight of that is pretty massive. And what it's saying is that since Radio Independence Group set up, the whole world of audio has completely exploded. It's quite astonishing and it's fantastic. And it's all down to headphones. It's all down to the mobile phone. But it's also down to brands and publishers and advertising, understanding that telling stories, telling people things through audio is just a brilliant way to go. It just gets into their heads like nothing else can. And the change was not just cosmetic and we fancied a fancy new logo, but was to reflect that it isn't just about radio anymore. It's about audio, but also that RIG, Radio Independence, worked when you were defining yourself to a large, but not wholly, but really to a large extent as being independent of the BBC. And while the BBC work is vastly important to a lot of our members, it's by no means what everybody else is doing now. So it reflects better the membership. Hopefully it will mean more to people who've looked at RIG and thought possibly should be a member, not quite sure. Oh, it's already all about making programmes for Radio 4. Well, it's not anymore.
And we've got endorsements, haven't we, on that press release from the government, from Radio Centre, from Panoply. No, I mean, this is a range of people that we're hoping to engage
with.
No,
absolutely. And when you've got the DCMS coming up with a brilliant quote and understanding that we can help put audio in the centre of the creative industries in this country, what it's also saying is that all those other people understand exactly why we're doing this. So I would say to people who are not members of RIG, no hard sell, but just think again whether you're a content provider, content marketing, for example, provider working mainly in audio, whether you're working in audiobooks for the publishers, whether you should come. I was about to say rig.
There's a swear box now, isn't there? We talked about this, that anyone who says the R word will now be fined something. So I shall take some cash off you later.
Oh, thank you. No, should look in, think, well, is Audio UK a place where I will meet, be supported by? I mean, there are such exciting things going on, and we are literally talking to government. People know that there was a big public service contestable fund for programmes. It was originally just going to be television. Now looks as if it might be radio. Discussions are ongoing. We're not quite sure where it will land, but we've had really positive, really engaged conversations with all kinds of really important people. And that's what Audio UK can do for you.
Well, I'm looking forward to going on a trade mission as part of Audio UK. What do you say? I think we should be travelling the world.
Absolutely.
Explaining the advantages of trade post-Brexit with the best audio producers in the world.
Absolutely.
What do you say? All right, well, advertisement over. Let's talk about BBC Sounds, which we've all now got on our mobile phone, or at least David hasn't, but I think you have, Graham.
Yeah.
This is the soft-launched replacement for the BBC iPlayer Radio. What do you make of it?
I liked it. I found it very, very intuitive, which is unusual for software that comes from the BBC.
Oh!
It was, you know, as soon as you picked it up and you looked at it, you kind of knew what to do.
It's still got the dial kind
of it's still got
mechanism,
that funny
hasn't
thing.
It? Don't but you like that?
I don't know. I don't know if I like it or not.
You're more of a press button kind of guy.
Yeah. What I did like about it was I'd been listening to something on the iPlayer and I was a little way into it, and that appeared. And it was at the point that I was up to.
Spooky.
So I thought, I mean, I had to click to register, you know, but I thought that was quite clever, just that. Yeah, it's nice.
So the idea is that it's network neutral. That instead of saying, oh, if I want to hear, let's say, Caroline's programme that we were just talking about, instead of having to know that it was on Radio 4 or know that it was on the day before yesterday or whatever it was, I could maybe find it by putting in Windrush or some other keyword.
If you put in Graham Mack, you get my Sunday show from Radio Merseyside.
That's a delight in itself.
Just thought I'd mention that.
Don't I get Breakfast on Bob?
No, that doesn't show up on it yet.
Ah, but that'll still come at me from TuneIn, will it?
Yeah, it will, actually, yeah.
OK,
yeah.
What did you think of it, Caroline?
I've got mixed views. One is, I think, I'm going to preface everything I'm about to say with the fact that it is still sort of in a beta version. It's not complete. You can't download. There are no schedules.
You can subscribe, though, can't you?
You can subscribe, but I like to sort of go through the day's schedule. I like to be able to download. So
how
I can listen
very
on the
linear
tube.
Of you, Caroline.
I am desperately linear, but I may listen to it weeks later. It's very clean. It looks really good. You press the picture, you get taken straight to the picture. There's no double stages, as it were, to go through, and that's really good. So you will find yourself being hurtled into programmes that you somehow didn't expect to, and you might really like them, and that's probably part of it. It's completely platform agnostic, so it doesn't matter whether it's radio or it's podcast. It's, as you said, network agnostic. And I did go and look for my own programme, because we all do that. And I did like, actually, the way my text and everything looked. It's black text on white. But one of the issues, I had some problem with the boxes. So things like funny, chat and shenanigans, six things we love, upgrade for life. And I just thought, OK, you've got me already. I'm not not one of these 16 to 34-year-olds you're all desperate to get. But I thought, I know quite a lot of people in that age group, and I thought, I'm not quite sure how they're going to respond to that. The categories had no drama. No stories, which really surprised me. And I think one of the biggest things they're going to have to work on is producers are going to have to learn to find a new way of describing their programmes.
Well, interestingly,
because the hierarchy is the old hierarchy and it doesn't quite work.
Exactly what I was going to raise with you, because you spent a long time as commissioning editor for something that was then called comedy. The BBC seems to have forgotten what that was. It's now calling it funny.
No, comedy's there.
Is it?
But you have to go down into categories.
Oh, so is it a subcategory of funny?
No, it's a category, whereas the funny bit is something else. And the first three programmes I worked out, I did my maths, the average age of these programmes was 41 years.
Good Lord.
Because the whole way the hierarchy works, the whole way programmes feed into it, is the old system from the radio player. Unpicking that, I suspect, will be phenomenally difficult and very expensive. But they seriously want 16 to 30-year-olds that this is going to be their home of audio. You want to be able to go into comedy and find some names you know, not Funny You Should Ask or The Goons and another show that had Peter Jones in it. They're brilliant, but I think they're bolting on. Yeah, they're bolting on the old...
So, Graham, the idea, as I understand it, is that because it is agnostic and neutral in the ways that Caroline's just been talking about, it's a way for the public, who have, after all, paid for all these programmes that the BBC has made and will make, to access all this stuff without needing to know that it was on Radio 2 or it was on Radio 4. Mm-hmm. And they'll also be able to access music streams. So you'll be able to go in there and say, you know, give me some chill out acid jazz or something, and it'll be there. Is that an attractive thing for you?
Not for me, because I like to listen to personality radio, so I will look for the name straight away. I'll just look for the name. I don't really go to radio to listen to music anymore.
That's it. You've just summed it up. That's what the BBC are trying to do. Is they'd rather you didn't go to Spotify, you came to them. But if you've just got a title of a programme and a picture and no network, so even if you vaguely knew that Radio 4 was speech or Radio 3 was music, nothing. So what I'd say, they're going to have to find new ways of labelling programmes, because I'm not going to just click on things willy-nilly. I don't think that's how people... What?
It would be good if we had somebody here who hasn't downloaded it and is therefore totally agnostic, David Arnold. Why haven't you bothered with it?
I'll tell you why. It's technology, bearing in mind that I spend virtually 8 hours a day in front of a music computer composing things. So I have to be on top of IT and the new software that comes out and the samples that come out. When somebody announces something like a new BBC app, my first reaction is dread. And I think, oh my God, this is something else that I've got to learn, bearing in mind that I spend the other 8 hours a day learning brand new things. So I tend to be reticent about downloading them just in case I don't understand it, or just in case I press the wrong button and it all disappears. And this genuinely happens. Happened to my sister yesterday. 500 photographs went from her mobile phone. She thought they'd be on her laptop and she deleted the whole lot. Couldn't get them back. And so I have to say, when brand new things come out, my very first thing is, let's not do that just yet. And let's...
Okay. But in principle, as a musician and a person who can interface with a screen, mm-hmm. do you like the idea of being able to access BBC quality programming,
yes.
which you choose, rather than has been chosen by somebody else and put into a linear schedule?
Oh, no, the principle is absolutely right. And I love radio. I listen to it quite a lot. Not during the day, I have to say. But if I can access the things that I like, I love Radio 4 Extra and the comedy programmes that we're talking about, Round the Horn, Kenneth Williams and those things. I adore those programmes. And to be able to access them at any time, of course, is the right thing to do. And Trevor, I promise I will download it and I will play with it.
Excellent. This is the Radio Today Roundtable for July. And after this short message, we'll be right back. And I want to talk to David about imaging.
Yeah, hi, Trevor. It's Stuart again with just a quick word about CleanFeed, if you've not heard about it. If you're doing an OB this summer, it's a great idea to give it a go. If you're doing an interview, co-hosting from a remote location, something like that. CleanFeed is designed for radio and for podcasters, and it's really simple to connect in live quality audio over the internet and even record it as well in your browser. It doesn't cost you anything to get started. It'll only take you a few seconds to sign up, and you could be doing your first live interview or OB within minutes. Find out more at cleanfeed.net. Back to you.
Caroline Raphael is here, so is Graham Mack, and we have David Arnold, who has composed many jingles. Now, the first time I met you, David, mm-hmm. I think you were pitching to a local radio station.
Yes.
And we were sitting around, all the staff, we were sitting mm-hmm. around listening to these jingles that you had piloted.
Yes.
And it was quite a long session. I was a bit tired, to be mm-hmm. honest. Mm-hmm. And it got to a suite of jingles. The first one went... It's springtime on radio. Mm. And the next one went, it's the summer on BBC. And then you did one that said, it's autumn on mm-hmm. BBC. And I remember saying to you, what the hell is the point? When would you ever want to tell people it's the in autumn?
I remember that I remember that conversation. And that must be 25 years ago, I'm afraid.
I'm sorry, that kind of trivia sticks with me. Anyway, I guess you've done better work than that.
I hope so, yes. And I probably wouldn't have done that, I mean, 25 years hence. But the truth of the matter is, now there are so fewer local radio stations, a lot more networking going on. At one point, I would write a jingle package for Southern Sound or Essex Radio or Chilton or whatever it happened to be, and I had 60 or 80 potential clients. But now I've got kind of two. And this means that rather than being in the studio every week for the various radio stations up and down the country, it means we're in once a year or twice a year. And it genuinely means that that expertise that we had and the singers that we trained are lost. It's a bit like the presenters that would be on Essex Radio now, and most of it's coming from London. So there are fewer presenters, there are fewer graphic designers, fewer people making notepaper and painting the OB vans and so on. Jingle making is one of those.
So what's the secret of a good jingle? I mean, is it the melody that sticks in people's heads?
You know, it's purely that. If I ever talk about jingles, I always say the essence of the jingle is the tune. And so the best tunes, Coronation Street, for example, not only is a brilliant, catchy tune, encapsulates the brand somehow and has become an aide memoir that you can take away with you. You can't take away the graphics or Cat on the Tiles, but you can take away the melody. And if people say to you, can you represent Classic FM somehow? They won't draw the logo, they'll probably sing da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-dum. And I think that's probably why that tune has lasted for 26 years, rather like Coronation Street has lasted. The strength of this is, how long does it last, and do the presenters use them? And they're the only two yardsticks for you to know whether your branding is actually effective or not.
Graham, have you got vocal jingles and a tune?
We don't have any sung jingles on Bob FM. And I'm sorry because of the company I'm in right now, but I'm not a fan of sung jingles.
Neither am I,
on the radio,
no,
aren't you?
No, no, they're all instrumental that I'm talking about.
And they seem to me to almost age the station. They've always sounded to me like, when, whatever time period I've listened to a radio station on, the jingles sound like they were recorded 30 years before. You know, going back to like the 60s, the 70s, they sound like the Andrew Sisters from, you know, they always made it sound older than it was. And I think it's a difficult thing with music changing all the time. And with us playing just such a variety of music, we'll play the latest Ed Sheeran and then we'll play the Kinks, you know, like literally back to back. Mm. What jingle would you put? What? How would the feel of that jingle go? So for us, it's easier. And I also as well, when I first started getting into radio, I lived in Sydney, Australia, and I liked Triple M, which was a rock station. And that station was so cool that their only jingle, even though it was a rock station with Aussie rock, was a whisper. And it just went, Triple M. And it did that between the song. And I just thought that was really, really cool. It was like, you know, in a world where everyone's shouting at you, to have somebody whisper. Just makes you just
what works for you, Caroline? You spent most of your time in speech radio, but you were on the old Radio 5. Do you think Radio 4 should have a sung jingle?
No, I just isn't worth the rows with the audience. And in fact, it's quite interesting that when we redid the schedule in 97, quite a lot of the sig tunes came off as well. It was just felt to be really cleaner. On the other hand, the best, and there are some brilliant trails makers working across the networks, the way they will use music and sound can be really distinctive and works beautifully. And actually, because it's not a music station, it's mainly speech, when they do those trails beautifully packaged, then they do stick because it stands out. They attract your attention again.
And what do you make of the shouty jingle? We're going to talk about Five Live here because they've incorporated yet another new word, not satisfied with online, on digital, I'm shouting as loud as I can on smartphone. They've now added in, on smart speaker. Duh.
Yes, I noticed that. I mean, I sort of zone out.
Do people ever want you to get involved, David, in that kind of
They tend not to do that, you know. You were just saying earlier that the music has to be compatible, the branding has to be compatible with the output. And so if you listen to Jazz FM, there's a 20-piece, 5-saxophone, 4-trumpet, proper big band with a really distinctive tune that doesn't say da-da-da-dee-da-da-da. It doesn't, phonetically doesn't say Jazz FM, but that becomes part of the brand. In the same way, with Classic FM, there's an 80-piece orchestra playing those jingles. So it would be wrong to get a cool young person who really likes dance music just to knock up a bit of branding for Classic FM. So I think it's more important.
I'm going to change the subject and come back to something we talked about on the panel a month ago, which is the Simon Mayo Joe Wiley show. And it got a bit of a panning. I've carried on listening. Don't know whether any of you have. Has it got any better?
I listened to about an hour for the first time. I knew that there was controversy. I'd heard some of the remarks, seen them online, on Twitter, on feedback. And the overwhelming question was, why put those two rather brilliant broadcasters, really clever broadcasters, together? And I'm careful about what I'm going to say next. Because
don't,
actually,
don't be
I think.
Careful,
no, I think from what
you're
they've
not
said.
At the BBC now.
Oh, it doesn't go away. It's drilled in. No, I think, you know, from whatever everything I know and say, they have huge respect for each other and they know each other well. But on air, they seem to show no interest in each other whatsoever. And then the woman came in, I think her name is Bobby, who did the traffic, and the whole airwaves lit up. And she and Joe were just chatting. And it just took off. And I just thought, that's it. I want to hear what goes on in that space between the two presenters. At the moment, I'm just hearing two different voices.
And I was at a dinner party the other day when somebody said how much they missed the interaction between Simon and Matt Williams. Of course, Simon and Matt have now gone away and launched their own podcast doing effectively the old Radio 2 book club. Mm. Have you heard that, Graham?
I haven't heard that, no. But I've heard the new Joe Wiley and Simon show, and that sounds like Simon's been demoted. It sounds like Joe's. It almost sounds like Joe's show. In fact, her name comes first on the blurb, and it sounds like Simon Mayo is a terrifically nice bloke and professional who's just got on with this, because it doesn't sound better to me.
I think we can say without fear of contradiction, that's true.
Right. I worry about the motivation, though, because if the motivation to do it, to put the two of them together, is to get another female voice on the air, and I say another in inverted commas because there aren't many on Radio 2, if that is the BBC, if the BBC has a problem with diversity, by having a quota, all they're going to do is cover that problem up. By making it, no, we haven't got a problem. Look, we've got a female presenter on in the early evening on Radio 2. And I think if they have got a problem, they should look at where the problem is and what the cause is instead of this.
Cynical. Let's cheer ourselves up by talking about Jeremy Hunt.
Well done saying his name right as well, Trevor.
Here's what happened last week when Justin Webb on the Radio 4 Today programme attempted to say his name.
...forced to sell their homes to pay for social care under plans being drawn up by the government. The paper says the Health Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, is understood to favour...
Ho-ho, and so amusing, because, of course, this is what happened when James Naughtie was talking about the aforementioned Jeremy on the same programme.
First up after the news, we're going to be talking to Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, about broadband. It's 8 o'clock on Monday.
Which was followed, if you'll allow me to do this, by Andrew Marr on Start the Week, making exactly the same faux pas.
Now, anybody, almost anybody now listening who was listening this morning will be aware of something that was happening.
Jeremy Hunt, the Culture Secretary, had his name Freudianly transposed. Right.
What is it about Jeremy Hunt that causes people to do this?
I don't know. Yeah, it could be Freudian. Who knows?
I mean, that for a minute I'm suggesting he's anything other than an honourable and lovable man.
I heard someone in Australia do a weather forecast and use the phrase pissed matches. And so maybe it's just a thing in our brain that can do things like that.
There was an album by the progressive rock band Caravan in the 70s, which was called Cunning Stunts.
Right.
And that was a bugger, because as soon as you said cun, you thought, no, this can't be right. And you'd swap that round. That was not good. Caroline, have you got any experience of this syndrome?
No, and personally I don't, because I try and stay off air as much as possible. But I do have this vision of sort of Theresa May every time she reshuffles her cabinet going, I'm not moving him. It really, really plays with everybody's heads. It's sort of inevitable. It's going to happen again. It's slightly sad that it makes the headlines, really. It's not the end of the world.
David.
One of the commonest expressions, hook lines, I think in radio, is greatest hits. Now, if you get singers to seven-part harmony singing greatest hits, of course it comes out greatest tits. And the more you hear it, the funnier it gets. And it gets to the point where the singers just can't say that. They can't sing it anymore because they know. And they've sang it so many times, they see it coming up on their sheet music. And you can see them laughing even before they've sung it.
In my very early days at BBC Radio Nottingham, I used to have to read the cricket scores. Can you imagine? The show was called At the Wicket. And there was an opening partnership for one of the teams that always scored a lot of runs. And they were called Eddie Fawcett and Ron Duckett. And I promise you, even after all those years, I still feel cold down the back of my neck. We'll have another advertisement, and then we'll be back to find out what our panel have been listening to.
Your best content, shareable and discoverable on any platform. Oasis from Broadcast Bionics helps you build a closer relationship with your listeners. Welcome to the social studio at bionics.co.uk.
It's the July Roundtable. Caroline Raphael, Graham Mack and David Arnold. We'll start with you. What has been floating your audio boat?
Do you know what? I said earlier that I spend most of my time in a tiny barn in Cambridgeshire and go in there and compose music for 8 hours a day, and all the neighbours, probably rightly so, think I'm slightly strange because they don't know what I'm doing in there. There's no tractors or anything else going on.
They think
on.
You're in the potting shed.
Yes.
That's potting, like, probably.
It's probably that. But what I tend to do is come out, and I adore Radio 4 The Story at 2:10. I'm absolutely addicted to it. The various strands that go on, Rumpole of the Bailey is my favourite one of all. But if you can imagine that, you know, I've started work at 9 o'clock, and all I've done is listen to music for that whole period. So the last thing I want to do is to come back to listen to Radio 2, Radio 1, Bob FM, or anything that involves music at all. So I'm addicted to that.
Let's have a listen to something that Radio 4 does right after The Archers.
Allow me, Mrs. Alinska.
Thank you. Do I know you? Your face seems familiar.
Oh, perhaps my being in a Tesco supermarket confuses you. We have met at two different state functions. I know your husband better, of course, with good reason. I'm Sir Ralph Courtney, head of the security services.
No, excuse me, I have to finish my shopping.
Oh, please, don't hurry away. Clearly your husband has given you the wrong impression of me.
I don't know what you mean. He hasn't given me any impression.
Good, then I start with no prejudice towards me. What I might tell you could be of great benefit to your son. Might even help him get out of prison.
David Arnold, have you got another one?
Yes, I have. I've actually done the jingles for LBC right since 1987, and I've seen their trajectory go up and down. It started with Douglas Cameron and Bob Friend from that long ago.
Bob Holness.
Yeah, Bob Holness and Douglas Cameron and Bob Holness, that's right. And so every morning before I go over to my barn, I have to listen to Nick Ferrari because he's so compassionate with people who've got sad stories. But if there's somebody on there, a politician or somebody who's setting them up with some sort of quango, he'll go for them. But that's deserved, and I think he's right. So he can be harsh, but I think his sympathy with people with their sad stories is absolutely perfect. And I think LBC, now being a quasi-national station, you know, it really is one to rival the BBC. And so I'm a great Nick Ferrari fan.
First of all, can I just say how incredibly disappointed I am with you that you could make a comment like that on your last call about where to be up the week, kid? I think that's absolutely disgusting.
Get a sense of humour, Toral. Get a sense of humour, Toral. Just no calm down. They would never have a joke about anything if we took your world, you know. It was a gag. I made clear it was a gag, Terrell.
No, it's not.
Why do you listen? Terrell, don't listen to me. Don't listen to me.
It's got nothing to do with
go find another show. Go and find another show. I'm banning you from... Terrell, I might have to ban you. If you carry on like this, I might have to ban you from listening.
There's Nick Ferrari broadcasting to Cambridgeshire. Mm-hmm. Interesting thought. on to you, Graham. So you're on the air doing a breakfast show from what you love to call Nebworth, but I'm going to call Stevenage.
OK.
So you presumably don't listen to anything until mid-mornings, but what have you been listening to recently?
Well, I've got a podcast and a broadcast. So the podcast I always listen to is Penn's Sunday School, which is Penn Jillette, who is the big one out of Penn and Teller, the magicians, the Las Vegas magicians. And they do this twice weekly show with Penn giving his opinion on life. He's a bloke who was in Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump as the Alan Sugar character. So he's got a lot to say about Trump because he doesn't like him. He's a libertarian. So he sits in between the political divide in America. And I just love the old showbiz stories he tells of Penn and Teller and how they came through and just everything about him. It's just great.
I remember someone trying to tell a story of Steve Martin being an asshole.
Yeah.
They were trying to. And the story they had was he'd offer them a cup of coffee over their house. When they put it down on the table, he put a coaster under it, and it made them a little uncomfortable.
Well, could you imagine? So just imagine you amongst Miss Company, right? And you go, you know, I remember Copperfield. And if you say that, mm-hmm. and you tell a story about, like, took care of this orphan. Could you imagine the glazing over that you'll
they
see
don't
in
care
front
at all.
Of you? They don't care at all. They don't want to know a good story.
So what my point is,
yeah.
I mean, I've met Ringo.
Yeah.
I've not met Paul McCartney.
Right.
But I can imagine that yeah. you would have to sift through every single good thing he's done
yeah.
to pull out the... He's a Beatle.
Yeah.
You got to have bad stories about a Beatle, right?
right.
So I think I'm now, the negative bias on celebrity
yeah.
is so overwhelming.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a universal thing or if that's an American thing.
That's the mighty pen. Graham Mack, another one.
I've been listening to Fix Radio recently.
Ah, which we've done a feature on.
Yeah, because I started out on a construction site in New Zealand. I was a pipe fitter for 3 years and then got onto the maintenance. So this is pre-radio, got onto the maintenance side as a steam fitter and eventually heat and ventilating and air conditioning engineer in Sydney.
You are a polymath.
That's right. But when I first heard of Fix Radio, it just seemed to me like, well, that's so obvious, because where every other commercial radio station is aimed at 25 to 34-year-old females who work in offices where you can't have the radio on, to have a radio station aimed at a blue-collar workforce who can give you massive daytime hours, why has nobody thought of this before? So I've been listening to that quite a bit, and I've got to quite like it, and their little... idents and their sex and drugs and sausage rolls, which is literally one of their sweepers, and I just love it. I just think it's great, and the music's good. It's not far off what Bob plays, because it's all up tempo stuff to work along to. And if you've got something to do around the house, like we've just moved house, so we've been, you know, unpacking and doing a lot of stuff, you put that on, it's just great. That's Fix Radio.
Fix Radio, we're nailing it.
That's a little fix of fix. We've got two from Caroline Raphael to come.
Yeah, so the first one is a podcast, and it is the BBC. It's quite difficult, quite grim, but incredibly important listening. So this is the Eddie Mayer and Sangeeta Maiska, the reporter, and they are doing a podcast called the Grenfell Tower Fire Inquiry Podcast. And every day they come out of the inquiry and turn around this incredibly thoughtful, brilliantly edited catch up about what's been going on in the inquiry with feeds from the inquiry. I know you can actually sit and watch it all day, but most of us don't have time to do that. So it's very cleverly edited audio. They discuss what they've heard, they discuss the implication, and there's usually an interview with somebody who in some way... It's incredibly grim, but what happened there and the fallout from the inquiry actually is going to say a lot about the way we treat people, the way we live, the way we house, the way we regard human life.
Here's a clip.
Today, the final expert witness to present to the inquiry was clear about the questions which had been set out for him to answer.
The first of these is ignition of the building's cladding materials. And if I may paraphrase, how did the fire get from inside the building out and onto the exterior cladding? My second task is to provide preliminary evidence on fire spread to and on the exterior of the building. And again, if I may paraphrase, how and why did the fire spread so rapidly and so extensively over all four faces of the building?
This is Professor Luke Bisbee, who is a specialist in fire safety from Edinburgh University. Sangeeta Maiska was at the inquiry watching all the evidence for us, as ever. We've already heard a little bit, Sangeeta, about this question of how the fire spread from the other expert witnesses this week.
Yeah, so Eddie, for example, on Monday, Dr. Barbara Lane talked about the number of combustible materials used as part of the cladding system added to Grenfell Tower during the refurbishment.
Polyethylene is a combustible material. Styrofoam is extruded polystyrene.
Where do you stand on the great Eddie Mayer debate? Caroline? Do you think he's marvellous?
Yes, I do think he's marvellous. I think his ability, chameleon-like, to go from the seemingly, I'm going to call it trivial, but we all know what I mean, the light, the humorous, to picking up a new story that's breaking or dealing with a human tragedy. He's got such kind of natural antenna for where to pitch himself, and I think he's remarkable.
One more choice from you, then.
Yeah, it's a podcast, and this is where podcasts are getting really interesting. It's a run of just 13 monologues. It's called The Tribute Podcast, and it is a script development person, Philip Shelley, has just taken 13 burgeoning, newly established writers and has asked them to write a piece of audio. They're very well performed. There are some issues with the acoustic. They're listenable too. The acoustic is a little bit tinny, a bit sharp sometimes. But to see people using audio and saying, I don't have to worry about anybody commissioning this. This is really good talent. I, as a script development person and producer, want to support them. And this is the way we're going to do it. And we're going to get these works out there for them. And he's presumably begged and borrowed and stolen studio time and performance. But I just think that's what's kind of miraculous and wonderful about podcasts at the moment.
Tuesday, 27th, Rachel Chapman. OK, I should say straight away that I think this is a waste of time. I know you're just trying to help, to do your job, and I'm sure some people find it helpful, but it's not for me. I mean, I understand all the theories, the logic, but that's the thing. And you're an intelligent person. You must have thought about this. You can't apply any of that to this, because none of it makes any fucking... Sorry, but it's... Thursday, 29th, Rachel Chapman. I just need to say that I'm doing this because I have to, OK? I'm not, you know, I don't... But if I don't do it, then they won't let me go back to work. And if I can't work, then what's the...
Well, there's a tribute podcast, and that sort of pretty much wraps it up, unless we have any other business. David, anything else you want to say?
No, I think I'm done.
Well, good luck with your composing.
Thank you very much. I enjoyed it. Thank you for inviting me.
It was a pleasure. Graham, good luck with your pipe laying.
Thank you very much. Yes.
And occasional broadcast.
Now and again, a dabble. Yeah.
And Caroline, good
Thank
luck
you.
With Audio UK and your other project.
Thank you.
This has been a TDC production for Radio Today. I've been Trevor Dan, and we'll have another roundtable in September. There won't be one next month because obviously we'll all be lying on a beach somewhere. Over to you, Stuart.
Thank you, Trevor. David Lloyd's Radio Moments are coming up after some tune-in talk.
At james.crid.land, I'm James Cridland, the radio futurologist. This week, why you're wrong to pull your radio station out of TuneIn.
Welcome to TuneIn's headquarters, located right here in the heart of Silicon Valley in Palo Alto.
Last week, US broadcaster Entercom decided to pull its streams off TuneIn, the radio aggregator. From now on, the stations will only be available on Entercom's own streaming website, radio.com, and the radio.com smartphone app. David Field, the company's CEO, said, "We're committed to making radio.com a leader in the digital audio space." And seemingly, this is the way he's going to achieve it. Now, I've said before that we should lessen our reliance on TuneIn. The radio industry doesn't own it after all, and by and large, they don't particularly care about us. However, I've never advocated pulling your stations off TuneIn because it's the wrong thing to do. Pulling your radio stations off TuneIn isn't a financially clever thing to do. The bulk of radio station revenue comes from radio listening, not from internet activities. And if you can increase your total listening hours by 10%, then roughly speaking, you increase your revenue by 10% as well. PricewaterhouseCoopers published a piece recently showing their predictions for the growth of radio in the Australian market, and there's plenty of growth in internet. But even by 2022, the company reckons that internet activities will just be 17% of total radio income. So put simply, the best financial strategy for your radio station is to get more people listening, to make your radio station available in as many places as possible. That's where the money is, and that's where your focus should be. Pulling your station off TuneIn isn't clever for your listeners, too. TuneIn is the default radio provider on many smart speakers and connected televisions. Now, sure, you can build your own apps for those too, but that's expensive and it's a surefire way of losing focus. It's unlikely that your own teams are going to be talking to as many hardware companies and car manufacturers as TuneIn already are. And it's really hard to be all things to all people. When your stations are removed from TuneIn, what will your listeners do? Now, sure, some of them will go and download your own app, but many of them won't. And they'll find a new radio station to listen to. And I hate to break it to you, but there are many more stations playing your easy favourites from the 80s, 90s and now. You've really not got the monopoly on that. Now, forcing your listeners to abandon an app they've chosen, presumably for a reason, is certainly a brave test of brand loyalty. But forcing listeners to choose a provably worse app is a questionable choice. TuneIn on the Apple Store has a rating of 4.6. The Radio.com app has a rating of just 2.7. On Android, Radio.com's app has an average review of 3.5, whereas TuneIn's app has an average of 4.4. So why would you force me to choose second best? The strategy for radio apps, I'd suggest, is relatively clear. Make your stream available on every single possible device and in every single possible app. Your radio station is the most monetizable asset that you own. An appearance here is valuable for station trial and essentially free marketing. But then, use your own data, your own programming, and your own intelligence to make your own app the best listener experience. A feast for the eyes as well as for the ears. Better artwork, talent photos and connections, higher quality streams, perhaps skippable segments, personalized advertising, unique content, and fewer ads. Be everywhere, but instead of bullying your audience, make them want to choose your app because it's the best. It's your data and your programming. So why shouldn't your app be awesome? Now that, surely, is the smarter strategy. You can get my weekly newsletter at james.crid.land and daily podcasting news at podnews.net. And until next time, keep listening. And now on the Radio Today programme, another smart strategy, listening to David Lloyd. Radio
Moments. Digital now accounts for over 50% of listening for the first time. And if you're around about my age, you'll remember when FM first hit that same mark. So, as we prepare for talk about FM switch over or switch off, let's remember when it happened to some AM stations.
Radio 1 programmes on AM 1053 and 1089 now revert to FM. Please adjust your sets, OK? Adjust your sets right now. That's all Radio 1 programmes on AM 1053 and 1089 will now revert permanently to FM between 97 and 99. Please adjust your sets to hear Radio 1. Radio 1 only on FM 97 to 99. 1053 and 1089 closing down in 5 minutes. So retune now if you're still on medium wave, and you'll hear Stephen Tintin Duffy. You'll hear Stephen Tintin Duffy by the time you retune.
This is 1053 and 1089 medium wave, the frequencies formerly occupied by BBC Radio 1. Radio 1 is now an FM-only station. Please retune your radio to FM. It may also be marked VHF or U, where you'll find us between 97 and 99.
Radio 1, 24 years ago this week, cajoling its reluctant medium wave listeners across to FM. And talking of digital, actually, it's just 16 years this week that we got the first DAB set to retail for under £100. It was the Evoke 1. As BBC local stations celebrate their 50th anniversaries one by one, there's one of them which won't be celebrating because it didn't last 50 years.
Well, this afternoon, the Minister of Posts and Telecommunications, Sir John Eden, has been answering a question in the House of Commons about the future of BBC Radio Durham. And following that answer, the BBC has now issued the following statement. BBC local radio in the north of England is moving into a new area. A new station is to be opened in Carlisle. It's going to start transmissions during 1973 on both VHF and medium wave. To help finance the new Carlisle station, the BBC is going to close down Radio Durham, and transmissions here will end on August the 25th, 1972. This was one of the first of the BBC local stations and has won for itself an interested audience. But since the opening of Radio Newcastle and Radio Teesside, the whole of this area has now been duplicated by one or other of these stations.
The end of BBC Radio Durham, which had launched this week in 1968. Steve Wright in the Afternoon has become part of the British radio tapestry. It began, of course, on Radio 1 37 years ago, and 19 years ago moved to Radio 2, where he replaced Stewpot. So let's celebrate Steve Wright.
Braces, my trousers would fall down.
Would they?
You wouldn't want my trousers to fall down now, would you?
No, I wouldn't.
More people listen to Steve Wright in the Afternoon than all the other radio stations combined. If we were commercial radio, we'd be the most expensive you could buy. But we're not. We're commercial free.
Radio 1 FM.
Yes, hang on a sec. Is this his number? Okay. See me in.
Hello, Sid, hello, can you hear me? Sid, show me,
baby. We're taking a short radio break, so a few thank yous. Firstly, to you for listening. Thank you very much. I can't even begin to tell you how much we love you and how much I appreciate it. In BBC Radio, thanks to Stuart Grundy, Doreen Davis, Dave Tate, Trevor Dan, Ron Belchier, Dave Price, Ted Bester, Malcolm Brown, Jonathan Ruffell, Mick Vilcoich. Thanks also to the controllers, Derek Chinnery, Johnny Beeling, Matthew Bannister, the executives, David Hatch, Liz Forgan, and of course, John Burt!
Oh, Johnny!
And thanks for listening, and remember, I'll be back.
There's Tim Smith, the old woman, Sally Traffic, Matt Williams with the sport. The oldies chosen by Olive Smith from Beeworthy, of Beeworthy in Devon. Your emails, your texts, the regional news, the factoids, the showbiz, the lifestyle. It's all on The Big Show.
Steve Wright in the Afternoon.
Steve Wright, who began on his Radio 2 Afternoon show this week 19 years ago. Steve began, of course, on commercial radio, which has its fair share of launch anniversaries this week, not least in York.
Testing on 104.7 megahertz FM. Minster FM, playing Yorkshire's capital hits from 6 a.m. on Saturday, July the 4th. Minster FM, North Yorkshire's newest radio station.
You're listening to Yorkshire's new radio station. Minster FM.
Minster FM has come to York today.
Minster FM, launching in York this week in 1992, and slightly further south this week in 1975, Britain got its 19th commercial station.
Radio Trent broadcasts from Nottingham on 301 metres, 998 kilohertz medium wave, and on 96.2 megahertz VHF stereo. It's Thursday, the 3rd of July.
6 o'clock. Good morning.
We decided not to use telephone participation programming at all during the daytime, partly because BBC Radio Nottingham uses telephone programming very heavily, and partly because we wanted to give good value. When we do music, we do music, and when we talk, we talk. We don't mix the two things at all. So what we never do is during the day, stop, start. It's all start.
Trent on air this week, 43 years ago. The station became part of GCAP's One network 13 years ago this week, and then part of the Hit Music Network 10 years ago this week, under its new global radio ownership. It's now, of course, part of Capital East Midlands, and producing some impressive audiences too. From the sepia pages of history, this week in 1938, John Reith left Broadcasting House. Imagine how he felt as he handed back his swipe card. He'd kicked it all off in the first place as its first Director General. He'd moved into its new premises he didn't like at Broadcasting House. He'd launched television, which he also wasn't keen on, and he'd fallen out with the BBC governors and the government. His PA was the truly wonderful Dorothy Torrey.
Terribly tiresome he was towards the end, because he was always coming out to the office bored. I've got nothing to do. I've done it all. I've done the BBC. I've got it where I want it.
Broadcasting is a development with which the future must reckon, and reckon seriously. Here is an instrument of almost incalculable importance in the social and political life of the community.
John Reith, leaving the BBC 80 years ago this week. So with Apple launching Beats 1 3 years ago.
Live from LA to the world.
This is Beats 1.
Sing Something Simple, beginning on the Light program 59 years ago. BBC's Six Music saved this week 8 years ago.
Protesters took to internet sites like Facebook and Twitter to urge the BBC to reconsider.
And Ted Short, the Postmaster General, announcing that the new Radio 247, later called Radio 1, would be a really robust musical service 51 years ago.
Radio 1 is wonderful.
Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thanks this week to Trevor Dan and guests Caroline, David and Graham, plus David Lloyd, James Cridland, Roy Martin, Graham Liver and you for listening. See you next time.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creating and distributing clever software for radio.